Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio, shortwave radio, and it's about radio is what it's about. And listen, don't touch that dial. Don't do it. Not yet. Because coming up is a program you're going to want to hear. Our special guest is Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. Our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. Now, what you're going to learn about today is a whole system. It's an interesting thing for hams. It's an interesting thing for shortwave radio enthusiasts and radio enthusiasts, period. You are going to learn about our finder. It's coming up on QSO. How about a shortwave radio you can hold in the palm of your hand? How about a shortwave radio that's no bigger than a pack of cigarettes? And yet, so sensitive and so selective, it will blow your mind. I'm talking about the SkyWave. The SkyWave radio from Sea Crane. You need to go to the Sea Crane website, seacrane.com, and check out the SkyWave. I've not seen anything like this radio. I've looked at every kind of shortwave radio there is. This thing is a mind blow. It really is. It's based around some sort of a DSP chip, I guess I want to say. And, buddy, when it locks into a signal, it locks in. I'm listening to WTWW on this thing, and I'm just having my mind blown. Go check this thing out. If you don't have one, you need one. If you're a shortwave radio listener and a shortwave fan, you have to have a SkyWave, especially with Art Bell coming back to radio via shortwave on WTWW. Now, if you'll call the Sea Crane Company and order a SkyWave mentioning WTWW, you get a special bonus. Now, you be sure and do that. Check out this little radio, the SkyWave from the Sea Crane Company. You are now listening to QSO Live, and we appreciate you tuning in and joining us. I want to say hello to our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. Frank, are you with us?
And a one and a two, and here we go. I am indeed here.
All right. We have with us a special guest tonight. This gentleman has been on QSO several times, but he just keeps making progress, making waves, making things better to the point where we just have to keep bringing him back. And that's Bob Greenberg, W2CKY. Hello, Bob. Are you there?
I am here, and it's CYK, Whiskey 2, Charlie Yankee Kilowatt.
Yeah, well, I'm dyslexic, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, haven't you ever dealt with a dyslexic person before? Get everything backwards. I'd like to introduce you to Frank. Frank is our co-host, and Frank, I don't know if you've had a chance to look up anything or see anything on Bob, but he is the creator of Our Finder. And, you know, this thing came in like, you know, a little app on your phone. It was real cute and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden it was like an explosion took place. And now this thing has become what I consider to be the standard. And it works with so many of the software programs now. And Bob, of course, can tell us all about that, where you can, you know, you can program your HT in a matter of seconds, it seems like. So, where do we start? I guess, Bob, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your ham radio background. I know folks have maybe heard the story before. And I don't know if your son is with you tonight, but if he is, you guys have quite a family.
He may pop in.
Okay, you guys have quite a family story. So why don't you begin, and then Frank can jump in and ask some questions too.
Sure. Well, I am a third generation ham. My son's a fourth generation. We only know of three of them out there, the fourth generations. So if anybody knows of any, we'd love to hear about them. But my grandfather, W2LH, and my grandmother, W2EEO, and my dad's K2ACM, and his sister was W2GPK, and later on N6VSU, and myself, I've had a couple of calls, WA2GDH back in high school in in the mid-70s, and N0FYS when I hailed from Colorado, and I took my grandfather's station license from the 20s, just about 10 years ago now, 12 years ago. So, and then my son is 15. He's W2EEO. And he may wander in at some point.
Well.
So I was pretty much at ham radio around me all my life.
Well, the beginnings of R Finder. Are you familiar with R Finder, Frank, at all? Have you used that app, or have you seen it?
Oh, you bet I have. And one of the things that makes it go, Bob, if I may be so bold, it's powered by people. And by that, I mean a crowdsourced data.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That seems to be the mode these days.
Bob, I served for about 6 months on what they say is the largest repeater coordinating group in the country, the Southeastern Repeater Association. And I'm fairly familiar with how repeater coordination works, and I would agree with you that the way that the bureaucracy sort of intervenes, and we'll probably get into that more during this show, going straight to the so-called horse's mouth and getting repeater trustees and just users to update data via a crowdsource model just really seems to be a good ticket. And the way that you work with the commercial software, RT Systems, some people don't like to pay for software. But people do like to pay for software that gets the job done. And so I think that's a great partnership.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, actually, RT Systems software, Rod did a heck of a job, and Karen, they did a heck of a job creating a really great software that works consistently over, I think they're well over 100 radio types at this point. Same piece of software will program all of them. So it's pretty cool, and we were excited to partner with them to bring automated list management and list loading directly into their software. And I don't know if you've seen it lately. Did you see the thing we added earlier this year?
You mean the routing capability?
Yeah, the routing capability. Yeah, that is. It seems like I keep being told that it's a killer app, and we have a video on YouTube about it. That if you look up R Finder Killer, you'll see it. That is an amazing thing. I can thank you letters like almost every day about it. So,
well, Bob, that is kind of the killer feature because as Ted and I and other guests have talked about, and as many other hams have talked about, the silence of the lambs is what seems to be depressing repeater use. And part of that is simply the relative inability that if you go on a trip where you really sort of need to be able to get contact with repeaters, it's the lack of that. And with the caps on the number of channels or pairs you can have in mobile units or HDs, even though that's increasing by leaps and bounds, my Yaesu FT 400DR will handle, I don't know how many, I've got 100 or so programmed. And I travel from Jackson, Mississippi to Tuscaloosa, Alabama to Birmingham to the Atlanta area and then north to Memphis with some frequency. And so I've just got those different routes, you know, programmed in, and it's just really, really convenient.
You know, one of the things that I was going to point out, and my son David is with me here, KG4WXW. He's on.
Good evening.
Hey, David, I haven't seen you in a dog's age.
He's on the other microphone here.
Yes, good evening.
But David was the one that turned me on to R Finder. You know, now see, David is much younger than I am. So he's on his cell phone playing with apps, and all of a sudden he discovers this thing. And then he comes into me and says, "You got to see this. You got to see this." This has been years ago. And so, I mean, I guess the thing of it is that I can see this thing as being a route for young people. I mean, it really is, because I don't think, you know, older folks are not going to discover it nearly as quick as the younger ones are. So,
you'd be really surprised. You would be really surprised, Ted. Hams of all ages find it. Everybody's got a smartphone these days, and anybody uses a smartphone every day, like, knows what an app is at this point. A couple of years ago, it was different. A couple of years ago, if I was at Dayton, a lot of people would come up and look at it and just kind of shrug their shoulders, and they'd whip out a flip phone. But you don't see that anymore. Just about everybody has a smartphone. I think in about a year or two, there'll be no more dumb phones pretty much available to the mass market. You know, you're able to find old ones, I guess, but it looks like everybody's going to be on a smartphone pretty soon, and everybody's getting used to it. I was at a breakfast this morning, and there were a lot of older folks there, and they all had smartphones, and they all had their iPhones out, and they're all, you know, doing the usual. You know, I'm staring at my smartphone and getting nothing done. But you'd be surprised. Everybody knows now. So that's nice. But you know, our finder on the apps are a great tool. You know, we think we've done a nice job, and we're told that we have. And you know, we have a lot of really great features in it. Exclusive features in it. That really nothing else can do. But you know, this whole thing is, as you guys were mentioning earlier, with RT and with Chirp also at some level. You know, you can, if you use Chirp, you can make a query directly in Chirp of our finder, or you can run a route on the web and then import it into Chirp. So we've made it so it's easy to program radios and even over routes, which is really cool. You know, I mean, In one of our original demos, we did a route from Signal Hill, Newfoundland to San Diego, California, via Edmonton and Vancouver, and it found the whole route. And we've been able to route from just about anywhere to anywhere, except you can't get past Panama to go to South America. You can't seem to calculate a route from Panama to Medellin, for instance, in Colombia. And also, going across from Turkey into Lebanon, to Egypt, you cannot get across that whole, that route. But there's, pretty much everywhere in the world. I mean, we've run routes from Oslo to Azerbaijan and no problem.
Bob, are you using the Google Maps routing technology, or how are you actually computing the routes?
Yeah, that's actually what we do. We use the Google Routes technology to compute the routes, and then we have a very complicated algorithm to find the machines along that route.
So you're doing a buffer along the route, or?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you doing a buffer from the route to select the machines? Are you familiar with the concept of a buffer?
Yeah, no, I am. But, you know, it's very proprietary what we did, and it actually took us many months to come up with an algorithm that worked.
Sure. The reason I ask, I taught GIS from the early 80s on forward. So.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah. Actually, I used to work with GIS in the early 80s, too. So I know actually, yeah, early 80s to like 90-ish.
Yeah.
When working at IBM, we had GIS systems that we were dealing with.
The routing stuff is, in fact, so-called rocket science. It's getting better. But really, the limitation is not on your product per se, it's simply on the Google routing function. And when they can't route, then you can't route. Is it a fair statement?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's why we can't get, you know, from Panama City, Panama to Medellin, Colombia. There's no, I think it's more of a, they don't want to send anybody over that mountain pass between, between Panama and Colombia because it's too dangerous. I just have a feeling they don't want to send anybody there, you know, so they don't give you a route for it.
Bob, I was going to ask you a question. Now, are you on a cordless phone at this point?
No, I'm on a wired phone, and I actually have the handset picked up. I'm not on the speaker.
Okay. Well, the only reason I was asking is there's been some breakup. Were you hearing that, Frank, at all?
Just a little bit. Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that if you're on a cordless, maybe you could get on the actual handset. But that must not be the issue. Yeah, a little gurgle, a little swish.
Well, old technology. You know, there's bound to be some breakups here or there. So.
Anyhow.
Well, there's probably a couple of customers on Long Island as well.
Probably.
Yeah, I would think so. So, anyhow.
We did use the Google routing technology. And the Google routing technology is kind of cool because you can add in waypoints into a route, you know. So, we made it so you can put up to 8 waypoints along your route. So if you don't like the route that it took, that you can say, hey, well, go via this city, and then it'll kind of bend the route along that direction. You know, so, you can go from Oslo, you can go to Cannes, France, or you can go, you know, which kind of takes you, straight south and mostly through Germany. But if you tell it to go via Normandy, then it'll kind of bend you to the west and take you down that direction. So it's pretty much, you can specify what the towns are that you want to stop along the way, and this way it'll bend the route in the direction you want.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. We'll be right back with our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, and our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. Right after this. One of the new radio frontiers is Wi-Fi radios. What's a Wi-Fi radio? Well, this is a radio that sits on your desk or wherever you happen to put it. It does not require your computer to listen to radio stations. It's self-contained. It picks up internet by means of Wi-Fi or by means of direct plugging by Cat5. Once the internet is accessed, this radio has access to 16,000 organized stations, and there's no subscription fee. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the CC Wi-Fi radio. And, fooling with a notebook or a desktop to listen to radio becomes a real pain. It's cumbersome. And the little CC Wi-Fi radio sits on your desk. It's small. It's just like a little radio sitting on your desk. And you program into it what you want to listen to, and it'll give it to you. You can surf the dial. Get on there and just start surfing. You'll find things in every country of the world. Like I said, 16,000 organized stations to choose from. Now, this thing has great audio. It can be connected to your stereo system with RCAs, on the back and whatnot. Now, you've got to see this. You need to go to the C Crane Company's website at ccrane.com. That's ccrane.com. Now, this thing's got Pandora on it, Live 365, MP3 tunes, has an alarm clock, actually has a Wi-Fi strength signal indicator, and line out for headphone and a headphone jack. So you have line out and a headphone jack. An Ethernet port on the back for instant and secure connection to the Internet 99. Memory presets and a remote control. You've got to see this radio. I don't care what kind of music you like. Jazz, classical, country, southern gospel, oldies, rock and roll, classic rock. It's all on. It's all on the CC Wi-Fi radio, and very easy to select and very, very easy to find. Now, all you have to do is go to ccrane.com. That's ccrane.com. Or better yet, go to WTWW's website and click on the C Crane logo. That's right. Just click on that C Crane logo. You've been to our website, WTWW.us. Click on that C Crane logo and go in there and look and find the CC Wi-Fi radio. Actually, they have several models, so you want to look and see which one you'd like the best, okay? And if you don't have internet access, give them a call. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And when you get on the phone, do mention WTWW, because Bob Crane's bringing you Art Bell's Midnight in the Desert, along with a lot of other programming you're listening to on WTWW. So they want to hear that from you. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. Is it possible that a coffee roaster who has been blind from birth could make the best tasting coffee in the world? Well, I'm here to tell you that not only is it possible, but it's true. If you would like the most delightful, rich cup of coffee you have ever drank in your life, I'd like to invite you to visit the website of The Unseen Bean. That's The Unseen Bean, UNSEENBEAN, TheUnseenBean.com. Jerry Leary, amateur radio operator, shortwave listener, he is the owner of The Unseen Bean, one of the country's few blind coffee roasters. You will love his coffee. We want to invite you once again, go to his website, and that's theunseenbean.com. That's theunseenbean.com. Here at the QSL Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there. Another information, but go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website, it's simply QSOradioshow.com, and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO, and now back to our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, and our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. This week, it's all about our finder, Frank.
Ted?
You had gone down this road, so I was expecting some more comments or questions.
And I was expecting that old hook to drag me back, you know, as in exit stage left. So.
Oh, man. You know, let's stop all this finger-pointing and get down to some serious name-calling.
I think that's a good thing. Matter of fact, I was going to say, Bob, I wish you would do that.
Bob, tell us a little bit about this marketplace. Let me kind of give you some stuff to shoot at. My observation, if you look at how repeaters are coordinated, the FCC wanted to get out of the business. Just too much hassle, too small a potato. So they created a memorandum of understanding with a nonprofit corporation that's located legally in Minnesota, the National Frequency Coordinating Council. And they were the body that the FCC bargained with at the behest of the ARRL, who said, we don't want to be in this business. We will get into too many crossfires, too many showdowns at the OK Corral, and so forth. So they filed an amicus brief saying,
repeater coordinators are the very touchy, so,
Yeah, it is. And now, having said that, though, that is one third rail for authenticated data about repeaters. Now, having said that, it's not, it's the thing where political scientists will tell you likely voters are going to elect Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Let's don't ever confuse a likely voter with someone who cast a ballot. So you have to keep in mind, repeater coordinators don't have the holy grail of accurate information about repeaters. I'm saying that more to our audience than I am to you, Bob. So when you look at what happens with repeater coordinating bodies, in the case of the Southeastern Repeater Association, the largest confederation of repeater territory, they don't publish their data electronically. They refuse to do that. They make you subscribe to their journal. They put it in the old-fashioned print form. Oh, but then they sell. But wait, there's more, Ted. They sell it to the ARRL for their Travel Plus CD-ROM product. And it gets a certain amount of money for that. So if you kind of go around and around and around, you get people like the Arkansas Repeater Association that coordinates repeaters in Arkansas. They charge you $10 to coordinate a repeater, but then they put that in a database. They put it on their website, and it's open to God and everybody, and that includes the league, free, because that's what they're about. So when hams think about why don't we have really good data on repeaters, after all, they are coordinated. We have this morass of bureaucracy that we have somehow gotten into, and people like you come up with a better mousetrap where you are getting it from a variety of sources. I assume most of yours is crowdsourced. Some of that might come from official records, but anyway, that's kind of what the market you're in. So how do you compare your product and what you're seeing with some of the others out there? Repeaterbook.com, there's ArtSci, there's several of them that aren't quite as robust as yours, frankly, and don't have the apps out there, although I think Repeaterbook may have an app out there. Anyway, I've kind of given you a lot of stuff to talk about there.
Sure. Well, it's kind of tough without, I don't want to ever say anything that's disparaging to anything else. So, I'm going to try to tiptoe through the tulips here, but, we've worked very, very hard to add value to the data. We've worked very, very hard to add value to it by creating systems that allow you to access the repeater data anywhere you are in the world from nearly any computing device that you might interact with. We've done some stuff with the Raspberry Pi. We've done stuff with Windows, Mac, Linux, through the Chirp products and Windows, the RT Systems products. There's actually even a third-party Apple iPhone app called Radio Buddy that even accesses our data, as well as the web and stuff like that. So we've added value to it. We've really created the first database for the entire world that is truly geo-enabled, geo-encoded. In other words, there's a lat long for each coordinate for each machine. So we were really the first ones to do that, and we were the first ones to provide a software interface to get to the data from applications. And we take our subscriptions and we reinvest it. We do new things with it, and every month or so we come out with a major update on Android or iPhone or something new. Like recently we had some complaints in Japan that our Japanese data was in English. But a lot of people in Japan literally do not read English very well, we have, by the way, the only geo-encoded data for Japan. Like, it doesn't exist anywhere else but in RFinder. And we had to do some interesting tricks to make that happen. The Japanese data was very, very difficult to work with. It was in Japanese, first of all. So getting it over into English was rough. But now we've taken the Japanese data and not only geo-encoded it, but there is now an entry for each machine in Japan, both in English and in Japanese. So if you need to read it in English, you can read it in English. If you need to read it in Japanese, you can read it in Japanese. And, so things like that. I mean, we've really gone above and beyond to figure out, well, how do people really use this information and put it into a usable, not only usable venues, but usable formats. So, for instance, one of the challenges, am I going too long, Frank?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, so one of the biggest challenges we had was repeater data all over the world was formatted differently. You know, some people use, some countries use periods for decimals. Some use commas for decimals. Some people like to use the old-fashioned, you know, degrees, minutes, seconds, east-west notation. Some like to use decimal east-west. Some like to use decimal, you know, plus-minus. You know, there's like half a dozen different ways of writing a coordinate. Some, by the way, put them in as a grid square. So it's, you know, it can be very challenging when you take a look at all this data around the world. How do you use it if it's in all these different formats? How do you download that from a website and import it? And some people say to me, well, I don't want to subscribe. I can get all that information on the web. Well, yeah, you can, but it's not the same. Like, we've added value to it. We've made it all consistent. And in 170 countries consistent, and, you know, and over 50,000 machines. So it's, you know, we have by far the largest directory on the planet, by far. And our data is consistent across the world. You know, and that's really what we've done. We've pulled it all together. And my son will tell you, if he ever shows up one of these minutes, but, you know, he would go to bed at 9 o'clock, and I'd be sitting from 9 to 1 almost every night for 3 years, pulling the data together and reformatting it, getting into a database, and then figuring out how we were going to make it useful and usable. And now we even have it as, you know, points of interest on GPS you can download from the web version. I mean, you name it, we've put it on it pretty much. And
Bob, to do a little tech talk, what software were you managing your data in?
Well, in prototype, we did it in Lotus Domino, but that was quickly went by the wayside.
Yeah,
we were Domino programmers originally, and what we found was when we got up to 10,000 machines, the response time for making a query went from a couple of seconds to over a minute, and when we got to 20,000, it was up to like 2 minutes. So we had to quickly fix that, and it was a very short period of time between those two bursts of amount of data, and we moved it over to MySQL, and on running on Linux.
Yeah,
and, that's where it's remained since. So
the reason I ask, I've been kind of a big data shop when I was a college professor in my labs. I mean, that's kind of what we did. So I can underscore for our listeners the grief and anguish that you have gone through to add value to those data. I've worked with many federal agencies, EPA being just one of them, to help take the morass of their data and make it user-friendly. I served on the Department of Agriculture's Advisory Committee on Agricultural Statistics to try to make the census of agriculture that instead of the census of aggravation to farmers. And so I applaud your efforts and fully appreciate what you must have gone through. And the regular, if there is a regular consumer, sees that and they go, well, hot dogs is hot dogs and free beats cost. And, you know, it just ain't so, because you can get indigestion on those free hot dogs, so to speak. And the value added for what you've done here is just for the U.S. alone, even if you didn't go worldwide, would be worth the cost. Ted, does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense to me. It really does.
Well, thanks, Frank. I'm glad somebody appreciates what I've done, because what we've done, really, my team, you know, I've got Jesse, KD2BTQ is our Android and web services programmer, and KD2DMH Nick is our iOS programmer. So you know, I didn't do it alone. I'm a systems architect. So I really don't code much. I can look at code. I know what I'm looking at, but, you know, I just don't, and I was trained to program, but in college. But you know, I pretty much most of my career, I did systems design. Take a look at the problem, figure out how to solve it. You know,
you bet, you bet. I've worked on about 12 different mainframe systems prior to the PC revolution, and built some computer networks and so on and so on. And I used some MySQL. I was a consultant to a company in Chicago on Wacker Drive and Sears Tower called SPSS. IBM now owns them. But the open source version of that, it's kind of a play on it, is PSPP. And that's one that, I mean, I routinely rip a million records without straining, and I have a Linux workstation on my desktop. Anyway, we're getting far afield from amateur radio, but this is the kind of technology that, plus your little bit of a proprietary leverage in Google Maps, geospatial technology that's really adding a lot of teeth to what many would, you know, kind of call the pedestrian repeater stuff. When you add space to it, then you add a lot more to the value of that. And as we are mobile, sure, that really, really adds something to that. Ted, I know you've traveled a bit and used the repeaters from Detroit, Nashville, and elsewhere. What are some of the problems that you've run into that our Finder sort of helps solve?
Well, I think, you know, you got to look at this on, I guess I'm going to say on a little bit more of a what I would call a consumer level amateur radio viewpoint, and I guess what I'm saying is that what I find traveling across the country is just plain lack of activity, which to me is kind of scary because as been said in the past, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it, and I see our Finder as one of those things that will bring activity to 2 meter and 440 and whatever else is out there, but I'm especially on the 2 meter machines.
We've been told that we're lighting up machines. In fact, Frank, have you seen our social features that we've added to the apps?
No, I have not.
Oh, wow. You know, that's kind of cool. We've made it so that inside the app, you can check into a repeater. You can actually check in on the app and say, okay, and then broadcast to everybody, hey, I'm on this machine. So not only in the app can you look at a view of worldwide chickens, but you can also, if you want, turn on some of the extended social features and drop yourself on the APRS map that, hey, I'm here and I'm checked into this repeater. And it's actually kind of cool. And in fact, the app will handle two SSIDs. So let's say you make a connection to an Echolink node somewhere else in the world. It will drop you on your local map at your current position saying, hey, I'm connected to, you know, this machine in London, for instance. And then right near the machine in London, we put you on the map right there saying that you're checked into that local machine so that people looking at the map could say, hey, you know, W2CYK is checked into this machine here nearby by Echolink. Let me go say hi to him. So we're doing things to share information about how we're using VHF and UHF. And in fact, you optionally can also, not independently, you can also choose to list your check-in on your Facebook news feed on your current status. So that everybody in your circle on Facebook will know that, hey, you're on this machine. Come on out and join me. And also on Twitter. So if you're followed on Twitter, your check into the machine will be on Twitter. So I mentioned Echolink a minute ago, and you know, one of the things we've done is we worked with Jonathan Taylor, KYRFD, that invented Echolink. And we think it's the first time this has been done between two amateur radio apps where we negotiated with him an application programming interface so that we could call his app and say, hey, connect to this node. So from our app, if you find a machine somewhere in the world that has an Echolink node, you can just touch the number, and it'll flip you over into the Echolink app and connect you to that node immediately.
Yeah, that's cool.
One of the things we did also was, yeah, thank you very much. We think it's really cool, too. And a lot of people have told us that's pretty cool. But at the same time, it'll automatically drop you on the APRS map locally to you and near the machine you're connecting to, telling everybody that you're there. So we're doing things to share the fact that I'm on a machine and trying to get the machines to, you know, to light up a little bit more by doing that.
Well, you know, one of the things with Echolink that I've mentioned in the past, and Bob, I brought it up to you, and we did a show some time ago. I said the problem with Echolink, it's so cool, but you could, if you're just looking for a conversation, you can go 6, 10, 15, 20 machines, log into them,
before
give out your calls,
find one.
And nobody's home.
That too.
You know, so if you know that somebody is actually home, it makes it a lot easier. Or if you can let them know that you're home, you know, and I guess that's.
Yeah,
go ahead.
One of the problems with Echolink also is that there's so many machines that are either defunct or that are just logged off that you can sit there for an hour and just like connect to one machine after another, and you may not find even a live machine. Maybe a few out of 100 you'll find that are actually live. And what we've done in the app is we've given you a view of live machines. And we update that every hour. And when you go into it in the app, it says, okay, here's your list of live Echolink nodes worldwide. So you can pretty much pick a city and connect to it, and your odds are pretty good, about 5% that you'll find a live machine by doing that.
Well, you know, one of the things that that I find irritating about living in the Nashville area, and that is I think we've only got one machine here, maybe two, but I think it's just one that's actually attached to Echolink. Now, there's a couple of IRLP machines here. But as you talk to these people here, and they're like phobic. You know, you'll hear these things like this one particular ham I was talking to. He says, "Oh, Echolink." He says, "I call it Echo Stink." You know, and if there's not a live, if there isn't a live person on a radio, I don't want it. It's not ham radio. Get it out of here. You know, and I'm like,
and we have our fourth host here. The alternate universe, Ted Randall.
Well, you know, it's true. You get, I mean, it's irritating. I mean, it's just plain, it's ignorance on steroids is what it is. Echolink is a marvelous tool to be used in ham radio. When a person, you know, and let's look at it. Let's say that there's somebody that is, you know, retired. They live in a high-rise complex somewhere. And they have a computer or a notebook, and it connects them to ham radio, for God's sakes. This is their extension to the outside world where they can't put up an antenna. They can't do these things. And so it's wonderful, I think. I think it's an incredible thing. But here,
I think it's a great thing, too.
In Nashville?
Especially when one end or the other is radio-based. You know, I love the idea that, you know, that you can just bring up Echolink and make a connection to a machine. So I used to love to talk to McMurdo Station Antarctica. Mm-hmm. I used to love to talk to the South Pole, and every once in a while I'd get somebody that was listening down there and talk to somebody at the South Pole. I mean, it's just great. I mean, I would amaze my friends sometimes that aren't hams. Oh, yeah, hey, watch, we're going to talk to the South Pole. What? Yeah. So that was really, yeah, it's really a lot of fun, and you know, everybody's got a different opinion on it. You know, some people say, well, you know, it ain't radio if it's a computer. Well, I beg to differ myself. If you have a radio on the other end and you're talking through that radio via a voiceover IP link, why not? What could be bad?
But let me just say this: what if you are not? Now, here's just an example. I met a bunch of guys out in Las Vegas when we went out for the National Association of Broadcasters thing. That particular year was the year the ARRL gave me one of the Bill Leonard Awards, okay? Now, I met those fellas, and they've got their deal they do on their repeater, and they use Echolink and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so now there was one fellow wanted to talk to me, and there was a group of folks on Echolink going through the machine, and I said, well, hang on a minute. Let's just get off on the corner here privately. You call me direct on Echolink, and we'll discuss this. And that way we were off the machine, and we weren't bothering the other guys. That was perfect, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And people that come along and say, well, yeah, but you just eliminated the radio. So what? You know, so what? We eliminated a radio for the purpose of a private communication so we wouldn't bother anyone. I think it's cool. I think it's really cool. And I think Jonathan Taylor's a genius is what I think. And I love Echo Lake.
He did a great job. He really did.
I love Echo Lake. No, go ahead, Frank. You can.
And I love IRLP, too, by the way.
Yeah,
love the IRLP too. Also,
I would too, but I'm not in and around machines much that have that on there. But I can use Echolink off my notebook and off my cell phone. You know, I can access it. So
you bet.
You know, so that was. But go ahead, Frank. You make some comments. Generally, when I jump in and talk, you know, real crazy, you have to come in and kind of.
One of the things I've been kind of holding back here as you guys were thrashing through this is if you were traveling and you just didn't put an HT in your bag, you didn't have a mobile rig, etc., but you're a licensed ham, if you've got R-Finder, and I'm currently using an iPhone. I've used BlackBerry. I've used most of them, but I'm currently using an iPhone. What's really cool is you can find an Echolink machine, use an Echolink app from your phone, and you can have your QSOs, and you can contact people that you want to contact. You can meet new people. And that communication is amateur radio, and I would go so far as to say even if it were cans with string, it would still be some form of amateur radio. You know, we construct amateur radio on an ongoing basis. But as Ted will tell you at length, the curmudgeons who have what I call hardening of the categories, that it ain't real radio, you know, unless you've got whatever. And I've got a Swan 500C on tubes on my left hand, and I've got a Flex Radio 3000 on my right. And they run the gamut between tube analog technology to, this is really a computer, and we're calling it a transceiver.
Now, you see, he's got a Swan and a Flex. That means he's a hypocrite, right?
That means I love it all. I love it all. Put your hand on the radio and feel the warmth, as Gardner Ted Armstrong would say, and I buy into it all. I'm going to learn code one day. But, Bob, your point is tremendous, and it's profound in that you're adding the social dimension to it, and that's got both just a cool factor, and it's got a tactical factor, whether you're doing MCOM or not. But if you're gathering for some event and it's got a ham radio theme, the ability to know what repeater different people are on is really cool. Bob Berninga had that programmed into APRS. A lot of the people where I'm at, we're using the new Yaesu Fusion C4FM that's linked with voice over IP services in their proprietary technology called Wires X. And most of it, whether it's Echolink or RLP or if it's D-Star, it's getting to zeros and ones in a digital format, and voice over IP is the common medium of transmission. So your product is, you know, it's kind of like the old saying, well, the porch light's on, but nobody's home. You've got a repeater registered, and it's supposedly echo-linkable, but nobody's home. It's either a dud, it's actually no longer connected, or there's just nobody listening. And so that capability, the TV guide, if you will, to find out what's on the telly this evening, is adding that value and enhancing our ability. And here it comes, Ted, for pro-social communication.
Well, you know,
social communication.
Now, he comes up with these terms you wouldn't believe. You know, that's the way it is with these sociologists. Hey, Frank, let me say something here,
Frank,
though. Here's
Frank. Do you mind if I plagiarize that at will?
Well, you know, it's not mine. That's actually I'm a retired sociology professor, and I still edit books and write books and edit a journal, Bob. So I'm still practicing. That's in the actual dictionary of sociology, and it's not my term. So. Use it at will.
Thank you. Pro-social.
As opposed to antisocial. On 14.313, that's the definition of antisocial. Ted, the mic is yours.
I have spoke with several repeater operators here in the Nashville area and asked them. I said, why would you not install Echolink or IRLP, and they say, well, there would be so many people on the repeater. Maybe people talking all the time. You don't know? That's the answers I've got. Now, that kind of tells you where the mindset is. Does it not tell you where the mindset is? Okay, I say...
Yeah, it's just... You know, it's just silly. I mean, we have a problem here. Not a problem, but... And I'm sure my friends are listening, so I have to be very careful, but... we have a machine very nearby here, a very well-known machine that has gone pretty quiet. And I wanted to tie it together using IRLP with a node about 40 miles to the east. And a couple of us just kind of prototyped it and started playing with it. And it was dead anyway. But the fallout from that, the panic, how could you possibly connect these two machines together using voice over IP technology? Well, we just kind of turned it on and it worked. You know, and why not?
I hate to say this, but I think that there is a rather large number of radio amateurs located in big cities that are affiliated with repeaters that are very happy to have the repeater silent. And I've seen that over and over. Now, matter of fact, in the city I live in, my two kids, I say two kids, David and Matt, both on the radio with me talking on the local repeater, and we were quickly ushered off and told that that machine was reserved for people from out of town. That we should move to a simplex frequency. Well, that's true. You know, so I think there's a lot of guys out there that are running machines and you kind of wonder what their motivation is. Now, see, I got all excited about our finder because I'm thinking to myself, this, as you say, Bob, is going to light machines up all over the country. It's going to connect people, allowing people to know where the machines are at. And to be able to program them into their HTs, especially a lot of the newcomers, people coming into ham radio, they go out and they get one of these little Chinese radios, you know, and they can pick the software up from RT, and all of a sudden, bing bang, they've got our finder programming all the frequencies into their HT, and it's just a matter of, you know, it takes 15 seconds once you get the software installed and the cable hooked up and all that, and bang, it's all in your HT, ready to roll. And of course, sure. What does that mean? That means that as a person goes through town, they've got all the machines programmed in. Of course, they're going to light up those machines. But I think we also have to.
Well, Gordon West actually said the same thing. I mean, he was very excited to learn about the RT systems and our finder connection. And he's been telling people in many of his classes that this is the first thing you should pick up is when you get your radio, is to pick up a radio programmer and cable and get a subscription to our finder so that you can get your machines going, get your radios going and programmed, so you can find the other hams right away without too much trouble. So it's actually, you're right. It is a great tool for new hams. It's a great tool for all hams, quite frankly.
Well, just the activity. You know, I like to see, and I don't think it's just me, Frank. I think you feel the same way. You know, when you get in your automobile and you turn your ham rig on, and if you're on 2 meters and you're tooling around town, it's kind of cool when you tune it in and there's guys talking. You know, I mean, they're there already in the middle of a conversation. You know, I like it to where it's so busy you can't hardly break in. I think that's when it's the most exciting. And then when you go,
see, when it's too busy to break in, you need another repeater as opposed to a bunch of silent silos that characterizes so many areas as you've described. See, we've got the problem and the solution reversed. We've got a solution, silent radios, because I say so, without the problem.
I knew this was going to shock you, Frank, but the way I solve it, and I know this is going to really shock you, is 140 watts into an SG7900, and let's go find a simplex frequency and hear each other. You know, so I do both. I like simplex also.
But, well, simplex has a lot going for it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you know,
it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and you know, we can kind of parse this. We can parse this in lots of ways, but the reason I gave that frequency coordination prologue is we got into this, Bob and Ted and Carol and Alice. I guess that would be the foursome in that movie. is that we have this bureaucracy that allows a Wild West frontier to kind of envelop the coordination. And yet the league makes money off selling that product. Now, there's nothing wrong with making money. There's nothing wrong. But do you want to make money because you add value to data, as in the case of our finder, or do you want to make money because you sort of have a cartel, if you will, over your private deal with these coordinating bodies? And I have a little heartburn with that. And, Bob, I spent 5 years as an assistant director for the Delta Division for the league. And I'm a lifetime league member, and I'm not an anti-league bigot. But as I'm here to say, that's just how I see them. And what you're doing is cutting to the chase, crowdsourcing a lot, adding the sociability. That's another term in the Dictionary of Sociology, Ted. The sociability aspect of that social radar.
Use big words, Frank.
And so that's the cool part about it. And so you're cutting through all the crap. I got to come up with a good a set of terms that have an acronym of crap. But that's what it is. And we shouldn't have roadblocks that we put in our own way to having fun. And I see one upside to your product, Bob, and what you've done, you and your family, as you're putting all this stuff together and evaluating. And I just face it, $10 for an app. Okay, you give up one pizza. It's like, is it $10 a year? Is that what the subscription model is?
Yeah, it's $10 a year.
Yeah, I mean, so you give up one cheese pizza a year for that.
86 cents a month. And there are people that complain about that.
I don't see how. I really don't see, because I know the amount of work that he's put into this, and I had to laugh because his son was talking at Dayton to me. He says, he's up all night long, he's sitting here in front of the computer, he just works and works and works. Well, you know, the thing of it is there's a lot of work goes into it. I don't see how you can pull that off for $10, and I can honestly tell you, I think the app is worth far more than that, and for what it does, any radio amateur that's serious, even if you own a Chinese HT or whatever they are, it's still worth far more than that, because the ease at which you can program all your local frequencies in, and all of a sudden you say, well, see, I got two or three of those Chinese HTs, so if I'm planning a trip out of town, I'll program the other one to the other city I'm going to, you know, and it works great.
$10. It's cheaper than a pack of cigarettes, and I know a lot of our ham friends out there are still smoking. So it's even cheaper. It's, you know, if you have one drink one day that you didn't finish, you wasted 86 cents. So you know, and then that's your payment for the month. So it's very inexpensive. You know, And we want to always keep it reasonable. You know, it'll probably go up a little bit over time, but not much. You know, we're looking to get a collaboration through the entire world. And in fact, Frank, have you noticed, some of the partnerships that we've made with the societies in other countries? Have you seen this?
I have been tracking that. I've on QRZ and elsewhere. I mean, you've been on my radar. And I've looked at your product and I've used it. I have the app, I think, on my iPad. I'll have to check. And so I've got probably one of each. But yes, and that itself is a deal maker of one type or another. That is an investment that you've made. So you have not been sitting on your haunches and letting the data kind of generate revenue. You have continued to build, and that made an impression on me.
Sure. Oh, yeah. We traveled to Europe back in June. We went to Ham Radio 2015 so that we could meet the societies of the world and introduce it to them and try to get them to join us. And we've done well. I mean, we started with Canada two summers ago, early in the summer, right around just before Dayton. And then, late in the summer of 2014, the Radio Society of Great Britain joined us. We're calling them member societies in our finder, by the way.
Good. And, I'm a member of RSGB.
Are you?
Well, yes, I am.
Awesome. Well, I was actually a member before I started working with them. This past winter, we picked up Amateur Radio Society of Italia. And then in the May time frame, right after Dayton, we picked up Federación Mexicana de Radio Experimentadores in Mexico. And we've been, and then right after Ham Radio 2015, we picked up Deutsche Amateur Radio Club, Unión de Radio Aficionados Españoles in Spain, and Réseau du Émetteur Français. So, we've been kind of working our way around the world, and, we've got a few more countries in Europe that we're in the middle of talking to. We have some big ones that we're talking to, two large countries, and I can't talk about, who we're talking to until we, finish,
sure,
our dealings. But, we've got some pretty big players, and I think you're going to be really surprised what comes out in the future. It's going to be, we are trying to make this a collaborative process worldwide. We want this to in the law, and this is how it started out, to create a worldwide directory that all of the societies of the world join in on. And by the way, I don't know if you've seen it, if you've seen any of the screenshots as we make these announcements. If you open up R Finder in Germany, for instance, it shows the Deutsche Amateur Radio Club logo at the top. It's actually branded automatically because it knows that it's sitting in Germany, and we do that through looking up the lab. We're in this particular country now, so we put that particular logo on. If we're in England, in the United Kingdom, the Radio Society of Great Britain pops up. If we're in Spain, the URE logo comes up. If we're in France, the REF logo comes up. So, and in Canada, the RAC logo comes up. So literally, we're making a branded repeater directory, much like the ARRL has for the United States, for every country that wants to join us. And they have the clout of having their own branded repeater directory. And we work with their whoever's working on their list, whether it's a repeater coordinator or somebody just working on a list, bring the list into the system to make sure that it's accurate and formatted consistently with the rest of the world. So, I feel really proud of it. And quite frankly, I was thinking about it the other day. I was driving along. I was like, jeepers, Grandpa would be really proud if he could see what was going on right now, what I've done. you know, what we've done.
You bet he would. And, you bet he would.
Yeah. So it's really a lot. It's really exciting. You know, I tell my dad about this stuff, and he's, you know, he gets all excited about it too. So,
well, you know, it's not every family that can have something in common like Ted's family. His wife and his two sons, they kind of all work together in WTWW and the programs that they put on. And here you've got a business around this hobby, and that's really cool as well.
I think that family situation, I'll tell you, I think there's a certain dedication you can achieve with family that is really difficult to achieve if you're using or if you have non-family members. I think there's some sort of a central allegiance there of some kind that I don't know that you can put your finger on.
It's really nice, and I love traveling with my son, and he comes to the shows, and, you know, he makes demos for people, and, you know, the last few times he's really, like, you could see the change in the way that he does it. He like feels, you know, some level of ownership to it and takes it really seriously. So it's pretty cool to watch a kid, a teenager, you know, get to travel around and meet all these people and be able to show something that he's proud of and it's great to work with him, quite frankly. You know, it's really great. You know,
well, it's unusual, you know, back in the day when, particularly for men, the son inherited the business, whether it was a farm, whether it was a store, whether it was what have you. And as mobile as we are today and as diverse and specialized as we are occupationally, it's kind of rare and kind of special to have what each of you has with your family. So I applaud you. It's really cool.
Well, thanks, Frank. I really appreciate that. And we give back. I mean, you know, I don't want to, like, talk too loudly about it, but, you know, I mean, we build radio stations at Boy Scout camps, you know, and we donate to the Youth DX experience, the YDXA, sending kids on Youth D expeditions around the world. So, you know, we try to give back a little bit, you know, and in that way. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, honestly, you know, I'll tell you, I'm going to confide something with the audience. You know, when my grandfather was about 3 weeks from leaving us, you know, I said to him, he invented something. Did you ever see the 5-band trap dipole?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that? Okay. So the 5-band trap dipole, if you pull off your shack, are you in your shack, if you pull off an old antenna handbook and you look for the 5-band trap dipole, you'll see it'll say W2LH or W2CYK trap dipole. And people have probably seen it. It's the trap looks like looks like an inductor, that's mounted to a ceramic insulator, and it's got, in the middle of it, it's got a doorknob capacitor in it. So Grandpa came up with this thing in the 40s, and he documented it in October of 56 QST. And I asked him before he left us, I said, you know, Grandpa, you know, you created this really cool thing that lots of people have made money on. They manufacture these things all over the place. You know, how come you never patented it? How come you never did anything with it? And he said, Robert, it was my hobby, and I didn't want to ruin it and turn it into a business. He said, don't ever make that mistake. If you ever, like, come up with something, turn it into something and make it flourish. That's what he told me, you know? So when he came up with this wacky idea to create a worldwide repeater directory, I felt like I had to do it right.
Well, what you've captured is the spirit of the open source, free and open source, or FOSS, paradigm for software. And now it's with the maker movement, it's getting extended, you know, into hardware. And people look at that model and they go, this doesn't make sense for capitalism. Well, it's sometimes called the freemium model. in which you charge for that next level of service or support or the add-ons or what have you. So one of the things that you did, Bob, it seems to me, and being a data hound myself, is that you created the fundamental. You could have had the slickest web site and app that you wanted, and if the data were garbage, it would be revealed fairly quickly. But you pull this to get data together, and then you continue to crowdsource it. And that's the little engine that can. And so with your grandfather's spirit there, it will flourish. And I suspect, or you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd be happy for you too, is that the reason that you're being successful with all these relationships is, in fact, how you're approaching it.
You know, I'm gonna say something here too, and that has to do with us doing QSO and it being a family operation. Now we have had some folks come along from time to time that we've taken on as advertisers just to defray expenses. That's all, just expenses. But one thing is, we really don't solicit to, you know, advertisers and taking in money like that. And the following of the program is huge. It's gigantic. The people that are listening, the people that download the podcast. But one thing is really cool, and that is this. We're never under any pressure because of a sponsor or because of an income or money situation. In other words, we have not made QSO a business, as you know, we just haven't done it. And there is total freedom in that. It's completely, totally different than it is if you are engaged in trying to make a living doing something like this. And I think, Bob, I think you, you've got that same freedom.
Well, yeah, we have other apps that we're creating. You know, we have an app. Actually, you've probably heard of Mini Circuits. They're at all the shows at Dayton. We're in the middle of creating an RF calculator for them. The first version is actually out already on both Android and iPhone. And we've created for just about every EBT system in America. I wouldn't say every. Let's call it 80% of them. We've created apps for the EBT systems for Social Security, child support, SNAP, things like that, for getting your balance from your EBT cards. So, you know, I mean, we have other things going on. You know, I'm still doing some consulting, you know, so, you know, it's not like there's not pressure to make it or break it. You know, I just feel like I'm doing the right thing. And you know, the countries that we've partnered with are, you know, I guess are, you know, showing that we have, you know, so, and the ones that, that'll be coming on shortly. So it's been a great adventure and an exciting adventure. It's really exciting to get a radio society from another country to join on and say, okay, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. Let's get this going. And we don't care how big or small the radio society is. If you got five hams in your country, we still want you guys to join up. You know, if you got one machine in your country, we want you to join up. And, you know, we're seeing users, quite frankly. I was watching the logs yesterday, and I was seeing users in Paraguay and Uruguay and Ecuador and Quito. I saw a user using it yesterday. So it's really kind of cool to see how people are actually using it. I saw somebody near Phuket, Thailand, using it last night. I saw, you know, there's people using it in Macau. I saw somebody in Macau last week was using it, you know, so it's pretty cool that it's almost like working DX myself to watch people using my apps all over the planet, you know. So it's really very exciting. Like, the whole thing is very, very exciting. And you know, my real motivation, like I said, was to get the world to collaborate on one directory. And now that we have all this voice over IP technology and repeaters are all connecting together all over the world, it's especially important so that everybody knows where everybody's machine is, no matter where you are on the planet, and to be able to go into your device and say, well, show me the stuff in Tokyo, or show me the machines in Beirut, and to be able to do that. And it's really exciting to do it and to watch people use it, and the thank you emails I get all the time, and it's just it's really it's been a wonderful adventure.
Go ahead, Ted. The only thing I was going to ask is, have you ran into any sort of cell phone, I guess I'm going to say, non-compatible problems because of a particular type of cell phone or something along that line?
You know, we had a problem for a short period with the Samsung keyboard on some phones. We had a problem. And I don't say that disparaging of Samsung, because I, quite frankly, Samsung's my favorite of the Android devices. I think consistently across the board, we make beautiful, beautiful equipment. But in some countries, I don't mean like all, but like not in the United States, but in some countries, the keyboard was adding an extra space at the end of the person's email address, and that was a problem. And obviously, I mean, Frank, you already know that we just had to, you know, trim the field to solve that problem. But it was like, what the heck is going on here? We found it pretty quick. We created a fix and put it out probably within 2 days. We had it like sorted out. We figured out what it was, and once we had it figured out, it only took us an hour to fix and get
I've had the Galaxy Note 3, I had the Galaxy Note 2, and then I've got now the 5. But it was really interesting because when they pushed the update to this phone, I no longer could use it to view security systems in two places that I have to look at. And I've seen some really gross compatibility problems that you would think that they had thought past. Okay, and
are you talking about viewing like security cameras?
Yeah. They just gave me the apps worked fine, and they pushed that new update. When I had my Note 3, they pushed the update to it. Bang, everything quit.
And then it broke it.
Yep. No, so I was wondering, and these are all Samsung phones.
We actually had a problem with Apple a few weeks ago.
Really?
The version 9.1 update. Oh, sure. The version 9.1 update added some security features, and it didn't like something about our security key on our web server for our web services. And we had to really scramble to come up with a solution for that, because if we make a fix to Apple, it could take 3 weeks before it actually shows up on people's phones. So we had to manufacture a fix that didn't have to do with the phone. We had to change the way that the web server was handling the certificates, and we actually had to change one of the certificates on one of our systems. So it does that happen? Sure, it happens occasionally, you know. But we have pretty extensive logging in the app. You know, if the app craps out somewhere, if it doesn't get like a good data return, it phones home and says, "Hey, Bob." Joe over here in Alabama had a problem with the app, and here's where it broke. And we take a look at it, we figure out what it is, we let them know proactively, hey, we know you have a problem, we're working on a fix. And people really appreciate that. I mean, if you take
the smartphones run a little slower in Alabama.
No way. No way. I'll tell you what, I used to make presentations for IBM. I worked for IBM, and I would say, I've been all over the world in parts of Alabama. As
yeah, I live in Mississippi, so you have to appreciate the regional humor.
Oh, the reason I go ahead.
Actually, when I was in Alabama, I would say parts of Mississippi, and they would
absolutely.
Get it. If it was in Mississippi, I'd say parts of Alabama, and they would get it. So, you know.
Well, the only reason I ask is there's so many changes in these cell phones. Now, when I went to the Note 5 of this Galaxy, I believe that's what I've got, isn't it? What I've got, Galaxy Note 5? I don't know what it is. Anyways, the battery life, just, I mean, on this particular phone, it's terrible. The one before, it'd go all day and all night and half the next day. This one, you know, it runs down at sundown. Now, it'll charge in 15 minutes.
Look very carefully and make sure that, that the power-saving settings are on.
It's not that. It's just indicative of this particular phone. The other phone was perfect. This one has a terrible battery life. And of all things, you can't pull the batteries up. But I was just thinking, between differences of cell phones, it's really weird. I get a lot of feedback. I mean, we get tons and tons of email about things. And on each QSO show, we can get as many as 600 emails. And I've not heard anybody complain about, our finder being incompatible. I just haven't heard a thing about it. And it seems so you've done a good job at making it work on a number of different brands of phones and whatnot and keep it running on all 8 cylinders.
Well, thank you, Ted. And guess who just walked in?
I would say Santa Claus, but he'd be a little early.
No, it's Whiskey 2 Echo Echo Oscar. My son Jesse just wandered in. Jesse, say hi. How's it going?
Hey, Jesse.
We're engrossed in a deep conversation about cell phones right now. So.
Well, Jesse, listen, this is Frank, K4FMH, and I was just complimenting the fact that you kind of have a family business. Now, just between you and me, Jesse, there's probably nobody else really listening. The next generation product is going to be your idea, and it's going to be the R-Finder for the broadband hamnet mesh networks. So keep that in mind. That's the next generation product for your company.
Mesh networks, you got it.
Mesh networks.
That's kind of like the Graduate movie, you know, plastics. It's what the person told Dennis Hoffman in The Graduate, going to plastics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Go to plastics, huh? A lot of people made a lot of money on plastics.
Yes, they did.
Well, yeah.
Well, what direction do you guys see future-wise if you're looking over the hill? And, Bo, by the way, I was just going to say, in Nashville, where we live here, Simplex is just not cool. And the reason why is there's just so many hills. You can't, if you're mobile, and you're not on a repeater, you're only looking at a mile or two and you're gone, you know. But what if you're looking over the hill there where you're at, Bob, and tell me what do you guys see on the horizon for our finder? What's coming up?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, we're working on getting more and more countries involved, and that, you know, each time we add a country, it's a lot of work to bring them on board and to do all the branding and stuff and get their data assimilated. So that's actually been keeping us busy. And, you know, my God, every time I do something now, I have to translate it into 4 or 5 languages, you know. So it's getting pretty busy around here with that. I don't like to let on too much, but you're going to have some surprises coming up pretty soon, and I think you're going to like them. Let me just say that.
That's great.
Well, I was just curious if you were looking at any particular, I guess I want to say, mode of communications or anything different, anything else that's involving social media and whatnot. That not necessarily where the how the product might be marketed or who you might be affiliated with, but I'm talking about in the product itself. In other words, our finder itself, plus or minus, you know, nobody from the outside world.
Well, some of the things that we're working on pretty voraciously is anything that has electronic feed of data somewhere. In other words, the repeater information now has been made dynamic and available. In other words, the system itself builds its own data. So things like you know, D-Star and DMR, you know, the if the system's not building the data, then when the people bring their machines on, they're immediately putting their data into a centralized repository about that machine. And we're trying to move towards feeding that data into the system, you know, automatically and often. So, for instance, we just added DMR a few weeks ago, and DMR now feeds dynamically every few hours and refreshes itself. Same thing with D-Star, with EchoLink, same thing with IRLP. All those digital systems where the information is already managed somewhere, we try to make that feed automatically. To make it feed, you know, on schedule on a regular basis, and this way it keeps it, you know, it keeps it fresh and alive, and it's one less thing we have to manage, you know, because we have the systems doing it for us.
What about C4FM? Are you able to get those registries?
That's coming. It's not there yet, but it is coming.
Well, one of the things that Yaesu's done, unlike D-Star in the early days before the IRC DBB, where they had multiple authentication servers, they have moved their WiresX system into the cloud. And when I asked Amazon AWS, the U.S. Yaesu official just winked at me, which I took as a positive yes. And that was a very strategic and slick move, because you're not all going to Japan or you're not all going to somewhere in Europe. You know, you're kind of a distributed accession model. So that's something that will be great for you to add as soon as you can.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're doing it. I mean, as fast as we can, we're adding automatic feeds from all these systems. So for instance,
well, all in that $9.99 a year.
We've had IRC DDB loading automatically for a while, year and a half probably, I think, something like that, maybe 2 years. So, as they come up and as the information becomes available, we get it into the schedule and prioritize it and get it to feed. That's one less thing that we have to deal with.
Well, and that's in that $9.95 subscription fee, the consumer needs to keep all of the stuff that you're talking about, the R&D and the maintenance, also feed into that price and that value added.
Oh, yeah. People that complain about $10, they have no idea. You know, I mean, I have a server in Utah, and I have a server in Finland, okay? And those two machines talk to each other and keep their data in sync, okay, in the background. Mm-hmm. And in the apps, if the app doesn't see one or the other, then it flips to the other one automatically. And, you know, so we've done things to make it geographically redundant. We've made things to make it have the data feed automatically so the data is always fresh. You know, and like you said, there's R&D involved in that. You know, the R&D in getting routing to work, countless hours. I can't even tell you. Well, I can probably tell you. You probably already know what it took for us to figure that one out. That was an interesting exercise in what I thought was futility until we had our eureka moment. You work hard and you make it happen. And some people aren't going to want to pay the $10. And that they're entitled to that. Some people
and those are the people sitting up all night getting their HTs programmed too, right?
Oh, totally. And some people are actually angry at me. I mean, I get these every once in a while. I see a posting online where somebody actually tells me I should just stop doing this and shut it down. I'm like, you just don't understand what we're doing here. We're pulling the world together into a single directory. Like, that's never, that hadn't existed before. Okay? And one of the greatest, funnest things in the whole world is creating something from nothing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we had kind of like this, you know, we had this pile of nebulous stuff, you know, that we've turned into something. And it's really exciting to watch it. And like I said, it's really exciting to watch people use it. The feedback we get from those that do speaks for itself.
So it's the new One World Ham Order. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
You'll have to watch out. The Southern Poverty Law Center in Montgomery, Alabama will have you listed as one of those hate groups.
Conquer the world.
Well, they can't help it anymore. Everybody wants to list everybody as a hate group these days. So.
Yeah.
Whatever. I lean a little bit more to the right, so I just look at it and shake my head.
Well, I would hate to not have the kind of services that you're providing. Let me put it that way, because I really think that you have put together, and to many it would be somewhat subtle. I hope through this QSO show this evening that we have elaborated and brought some of these finer points up to the surface for listeners to have a better understanding. This isn't just another app on the App Store that just lists some stuff. You know, the first round of apps was the FCC license exam. That was the first generation of amateur radio apps. This is far, far, far from that. And it's kind of in another class. There's just not that many a series or class of apps that do what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Frank. it feels good. Feels good that we've actually gotten somewhere with it.
So. Well, I tried messing around with a couple of different not apps, but I mean programs and whatnot, and I won't mention names. And you know, I'll tell you something. Then our finder came along, and then you know, Bob and I got acquainted with each other, and we learned that we can actually tolerate each other on the radio and at Dayton and Huntsville. We haven't got any further than that right now, but anyhow, I was overwhelmed by it. I thought, this is so simple. This is so cool. This is like, you know, what is it? The old television commercials when they would advertise the chocolate syrup that goes in the milk, they'd say, no muss, no fuss, you know, and that's exactly what you've got here. And I'm not pushing any particular product, but if you pick up a copy of RT Systems, you know, their software and their cable, you know, you're in. I mean, you can program whatever you've got. If you've got the cable and the software, it's just a matter of seconds. And if, like I said, I've got a couple, three, four of these, what do they call them? Bayfung radios? I don't know. We got
Malfung.
Yeah, I don't know. I figure if they bring the radio to the States, they print a name on it, and if they don't tell us how to say it, we can call it whatever we want. Anyhow.
Whatever we want.
I've got a few of those around here, and no joke. I mean, I've got one programmed here locally, and if I go somewhere, I'll program one for each city I'm going to. I think it's hysterical. You know, I mean, you can take, you turn that one off and turn this one on, you know, and you're ready to roll. So, I can see you crossed a bridge because I remember somebody giving me a disc and said, oh, well, this thing here is going to, and I put the disc in the machine and I thought, how do you do this? You know, and I'm reading the directions and the instructions, and I'm, you know, and I'm, I still don't get it. I still don't figure it out, you know. So I called either David or Matthew, and I said, come over here and read this. You're younger than I am. See if you can figure it out. You can figure out a TV remote control, then you can figure this out, you know. And or VCR remote control or whatever, cable.
You'd laugh that I wasn't able to program VCRs.
Well, hey, listen, join the club here. Well, anyway, so they came over and they read the documentation, looked at the disc and all that, and they came away with their hands in the air going, I don't know, you know. So, and so what happened? The disc got pulled out of the machine and sat on the shelf, and that's where it's been ever since. I think maybe since then somebody may have thrown it away. I don't know. But then all of a sudden, here comes our finder. And that's a whole completely different thing. And I think sometimes that amateurs create programs or create things. Now, Frank, you tell me, you disagree with me if you want to here. This is your opportunity. They try to make things 20 times more complicated, or they don't seem to have the ability to create something simple that you can follow very easily. You know, it has to be way overly complicated, and then somebody comes along like Bob Greenberg and creates something that's just it, you know, it works fantastic, but it's also very simple, very easy to operate and understand.
I would agree with you. I wouldn't have any disagreements whatsoever. One of the reasons for that in many cases is the engineering background of some hams. They did not learn to write an effective one-page memorandum.
Okay, now what is
right?
What is
now,
a memorandum?
I had a manager when we worked at IBM that would always tell me, look, Bob, you got to net it out. You just got to net it out. Give us everything we need and nothing we don't. I was like, oh, you mean like an Xterra? Exactly, like an Xterra.
So, you know, basically, writing a one-page memorandum, if you give that to the generic undergraduate engineering student who is, say, a junior or a senior, they will either write nothing or they will have a half a dozen or more pages of very technical, very specific, and probably very correct information that you can't get there from here. And so the ability to do what you said, to simplify it, but not make it too simple, just enough, is something that needs to be learned. And that's part of the challenge that engineering education and the National Science Foundation would tell you this and have said this, the ability to boil it down to the simplest parts. Now, this guy named Einstein knew that. He made that point. But I would agree with you, Ted.
Well, isn't it that engineers and engineering has scientifically proven that the bumblebee cannot fly?
Probably. I used to give a talk to the Engineering Honor Society.
Except by wire.
at Mississippi State University. And I would talk to them, and I would usually have a pitch of how smart they were. Because if you go into an engineering honors program, every kid in that room has been told how smart they are since they were in diapers. And once you get out, no one's going to tell you how smart you are. They're going to tell you how dumb you are when you make a mistake. And so I would usually entrap them into that being as smart as they've been told they are. And that what they're going to do if they're a bench engineer and they're any good, that is, they know how to communicate to others in the organization, they will no longer be a bench engineer. There will be something called management. And then you're no longer in engineering. You're in the people business. So the bottom line, Ted, is that engineering education has had so many courses that they don't take much in the so-called liberal arts, where they learn how to play well in the social sandbox and learn how to communicate and to take the perspective of the user of the product that they design. Now, Bob has obviously done that. Bob, I don't know if your background is engineering or not, but I'm applauding what Ted said, in that it's just simple enough for someone not to have to have written the code to understand it. You'll get a kick out of this, Bob. The industry standard geographic information system software is made by a company called ESRI out in California. I was working with them, and we were testing what was going to become their online courses. We had become a $100,000 a year customer on the first statewide site license that they ever had. Their lawyer said, don't do it. People will rip you off. And we were able to talk Jack Dangerman, the president, into doing it. It's a privately owned company. And so we were working with our online test people. And, you know, I kind of make fun of the stereotypes of people in the Deep South. The folks in California were saying, oh, it's taking your Mississippi graduate students twice as long to complete the course on the GIS software as it did the code writers who developed the course. My response? You mean the people that wrote the software did it twice as fast as my students who are learning the software from scratch?
On the fly.
Wow, I'm proud of these guys. They're only twice as slow as the people that wrote the code. Well, they kind of did a head check and thought about what that meant. So if you write the code, so to speak, it's very hard for you to get in the shoes of that user. Hence, we have this whole industry called usability studies. And I think what Ted was saying was basically you have accomplished that it is easy to use.
But you see how complicated Frank makes it sound.
I cannot allow my programmers to test their own code.
That is the silver bullet that kills so many great pieces of software, is that only the very few people who participated in writing it understands how to use it.
Sure. Well, half the time I test it, I'm testing it myself. But we have a set of testers on Apple and on Android, and we let them kick it around and tell us what's broken before we throw it out there, and we make sure it works.
Those beta testers, I've done that for years, and with most of the statistical and database software that was on the market up until probably the early 2000s, I was a beta tester in many of those, because I have a lab and I'd have kids that their job was to blow it up, and they would love that. And if you don't do that, then all the money you put in it. I'm a sociologist and statistician by training and practice, and I've taught statistics. And I write, my next book is on spatial statistics. I had one come out 3 days ago with Springer that was on GIS, basically. So I still do a lot of that. But the death knell of good software.
You must know about the multivariate algorithm, right?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of multivariate algorithms, but I can guess what you've done and probably get sort of close. That's a proprietary thing for you, and I respect that. So yeah, I've done a lot of routing algorithms and some fuzzy logic, as it will be called, in some circles. So let's don't get too far afield. Ted will have his crook and he'll ring me back in.
Oh, I think we
actually. Is there something I can say to the audience, real quick?
Is there something that you can say? Sure, you could. You could talk about
if you don't mind
cornbread recipes or something like that. I mean, You were asking you were asking me if there was something you could say to the audience. Now, you didn't say, can I say something to the audience? Just, is there something you could say? And I suggested a cornbread recipe. No, go ahead, Bob. I'm just having fun at your expense here, but go ahead. Tell the audience anything you want within reason and outside of conspiracy theories.
All right. Anybody that is connected or knows somebody that's connected with the societies of the world, the radio societies, please have them contact us. We want to add you guys in. And, like, you know, we've had a few of them say, well, we're too small, maybe it's not, you know, but it doesn't matter how small you are. You'll be collaborating on the, you know, on a great collaborative work worldwide. You know, I had, I thought I was close with South Africa, and they felt that their opportunity to join us was too small, but it wasn't. And I'm hoping that they come back to us and choose to join us, because you know, I'm just going to keep going until I get everybody.
You know what I think is cool?
I'm not giving up.
You know what I think is cool? And Frank, you see if you when he says, you know, all of these countries around the world and radio societies, regardless of how small you are important to us. And I think that is very cool.
You bet. They don't hear that much.
Oh, yeah. No. We feel very strongly about that. It's, you know, we want everybody on board. We want to turn, you know, we're trying to turn this into what, you know, what it is. It is the worldwide repeater directory. And while we have data from almost everywhere imaginable, I mean, like, you can't even imagine some of the obscure locations we found machines in. And, you know, by the way, when you search for machines, you're not searching in English. Let me put it that way. Okay? You have to search in the foreign languages. And I just got to thank Google for Google Translate to help me with that one. But, you know, one of my, I think the funniest was I couldn't find repeater data for France. I couldn't find it. I was looking for months. I couldn't find it. And then I saw somewhere that you say repeater as relay, R-E-L-A-I-S. I started searching for repeater data by using the word relay, and all of a sudden, boom, there it comes. And there's some data out there. And little pockets. It was like a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit here and a little bit, you know, but we pulled it all together. We deduped it. We cleaned it up, turned it into, you know, consistent formatting and stuck it in. And now I'm very proud to say that we're working with the French and we're actually probably in the next week going to be actively working with their new repeater coordination group that they've created around this. And this is something that's really cool that we're seeing now, is that even countries that really hadn't had formal coordination are now taking it seriously and using RFinder as their infrastructure to make it happen. And it's very exciting. I mean, now you can do a repeater coordination in a country and look across the border and see what's nearby. You know, so it's really slick. But we're not limited to coordinated repeaters. We'll take repeater, any kind of repeater anywhere. Doesn't matter, you know, whether it's coordinated or not, you know. So, and I feel good about that.
We are almost out of time. So I don't
get
want
right
to
right out of town.
I don't want to. I want to be able to pass it to you, Bob, and also to Frank for some final comments here before we do have to pull the plug suddenly. So let's kind of wrap this up. First off, tell the folks how to get the app. How do you get it, and where do you go to get it if you have a smartphone?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad you asked it. We just released in the last week trialware on Android. So anybody that's been afraid to download it because they're not sure if they're going to like it or not on Android, they can go and get it right now for free and have a gander at it. And It doesn't let you download data. You can't use the, you know, the value-add products on the web like RT Systems and Chirp and Web and Routes and stuff like that. But you can take a look at the repeater directory in your hand and have a look at the you know the nice job we've done with the Android software. Enjoy that for 30 days on me, please. But please don't forget to subscribe and join us in our project here. And if you see anything that needs to be updated, please in the app you can. We talked about crowdsourcing. You can update the data right or request updating from the app. It doesn't happen live. I look at every single one of them and make sure that the data looks right. You'd be surprised, Ted, how many people try to put in a 2-meter shift of 600 megahertz, which just doesn't work. So we got to look at all of them carefully, and so you can get it in Google Play, and we're also on some of the third party app stores. We're adding ourselves to more of the third party app stores now that we've gone trialware. There were actually, believe it or not, a lot of people that were going out and taking our app and putting it on third-party black market web app stores to try to give it away for free. But it's still subscription-based, so it was ridiculous. So there are a lot of old versions floating around, and we're trying to fix that. Google Play right now is a great way to get it, and it is a free download right now. And it will nag you every once in a while to subscribe, but please don't forget to take care of us. We work hard for you. On iOS, on both iPhone and iPads, you can get it in the App Store, and we are formatted properly for tablets. So hopefully you'll enjoy that and download it there. It is not a free download on the App Store. It is $9.99, but it includes your first year of subscription with it. So that's as hard as it is. If you don't have a smartphone, just go to subscribe.rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net. Subscribe.rfinder.net. And you can just subscribe using PayPal, and you'll get an email link to set your password.
All righty. Well, we are out of time. Frank, I'm passing it to you, and then we have to go bye-bye.
You bet. And, Bob, great discussing this with you. I think you've got a great idea and a great product, and I look forward to being a customer for years to come.
Thank you so much, Bob, for joining us.
Appreciate it.
Really, really appreciate your company and the information. And we hope everybody listening gets that smartphone out and goes up and downloads or the app and installs our Finder. I think you're going to find out that if you do that, it's going to be a real cool thing, and you're going to love it. Thank you very much, folks, for joining us. This is QSO Live. I'm going to leave you now. This is Ted Randall saying 73s. For those of you that would like a shortwave radio, that's bigger than maybe what you can hold in the palm of your hand, but yet is sensitive and selective, let me talk to you about the CC Radio Shortwave. The purpose of the CC Radio Shortwave was born when an engineer's time went into producing some of the best reception and audio that you could find in a portable radio. It's got all the necessary things, the tweakings available for excellent performance under various conditions, and offers the best combination of sensitivity, selectivity, and audio performance of any radio its size. Now, this radio delivers some of the best FM reception, and thanks to the built-in twin-coil ferrite antenna, the AM antenna I'm talking about, it makes the AM on this radio absolutely exceptional. It has continuous coverage of the shortwave bands and excellent reception right off the whip antenna. The 5-inch speaker is accurate, pleasant, and probably produces deeper bass than any portable of the same size. The CC radio shortwave is one of the few radios with a mono switch. When activated, the radio filters out the stereo FM multiplex signal, which can add a hissing noise when you're listening to a weak station. Now, let me tell you, this thing has an RF gain control, bandwidth control, fast and slow tuning. It's got bass and treble controls. It's got a lighted LCD display and lighted buttons. Clock radio, snooze alarm. It only weighs 4.2 pounds, even though it's a pretty good size radio. Has a stereo headphone jack, stereo line output, so you can plug it into a recorder of some sort. It's got an IF out for input into a computer, 50 memory presets, a built-in charger with auto shutoff for nickel cadmium batteries. It uses 4D batteries or 4AA batteries, whichever you prefer. And all the programming backup, that is, for, you know, when you put in your memories and whatnot. Now, you can order this radio from the Sea Crane Company. It's real simple to do. All you have to do is call Bob Crane at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW when you order this radio. Now, that, once again, the phone number is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. Here at the QSL Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. One of the new radio frontiers is Wi-Fi radios. You know, what's a Wi-Fi radio? Well, this is a radio that sits on your desk or wherever you happen to put it. It does not require your computer to listen to radio stations. It's self-contained. It picks up internet by means of Wi-Fi or by means of direct plug-in by Cat5. Once the internet is accessed, this radio has access to 16,000 organized stations, and there's no subscription fee. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the CC Wi-Fi radio. And, you know, fooling with a notebook or a desktop to listen to radio becomes a real pain. It's cumbersome. And the little CC Wi-Fi radio sits on your desk. It's small. It's just like a little radio sitting on your desk. And you program into it what you want to listen to, and it'll give it to you. Or you can surf the dial, get on there, and just start surfing. You'll find things in every country of the world. Like I said, 16,000 organized stations to choose from. Now, this thing has great audio. It can be connected to your stereo system with RCAs, you know, on the back and whatnot. You've got to see this. You've got to see this. You need to go to the Sea Crane Company's website at seacrane.com. That's seacrane.com. Now, this thing's got Pandora on it, Live 365, MP3 tunes, has an alarm clock, actually has a Wi-Fi strength signal indicator, and line out for headphone and a headphone jack. So you have line out and a headphone jack. An Ethernet port on the back for instant and secure connection to the Internet 99. Memory presets and a remote control. You've got to see this radio. I don't care what kind of music you like. Jazz, classical, country, southern gospel, oldies, rock and roll, classic rock. It's all on. It's all on the CC Wi-Fi radio, and very easy to select and very, very easy to find. Now, all you have to do is go to seacrane.com. That's seacrane.com. Or better yet, go to WTWW's website and click on the Sea Crane logo. That's right. Just click on that Sea Crane logo. You've been to our website, WTWW.us. Click on that Sea Crane logo and go in there and look and find the CC Wi-Fi radio. Actually, they have several models, so you want to look and see which one you'd like the best, okay? And if you don't have internet access, give them a call. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And when you get on the phone, do mention WTWW, because Bob Crane's bringing you Art Bell's Midnight in the Desert, along with a lot of other programming you're listening to on WTWW. So they want to hear that from you. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we've got this week for QSO. We want to thank you so very much for tuning in and listening. Special guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. We want to say a special thank you to him, along with our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. This is Ted Randall, WB8PUM, saying 73s. See you next week, same time, same station.